Welcome to For the Long Run, the podcast exploring the why behind what keeps runners running long, strong, and motivated. I'm your host, Jonathan Levitt. Through personal and professional connections in the running world, I have the privilege of getting to know some amazing athletes. I've always been fascinated by the psychological aspect of running, and this podcast is aimed at exploring this and much more. I hope you enjoy. Have you guys heard of Beam? I have been absolutely loving their products lately. Beam is a CBD company that's making waves in the running world by offering products that combine THC-free CBD with other high-quality ingredients. It was founded by two ex-professional athletes with the idea that everyone should have the chance to experience what better feels like. Whether you're sore or stressed, Beam is key for recovery and self-care. Try it for yourself with 15% off using the code FTLR from BeamTLC.com. I recommend Beam Dream Powder or the Focus Capsules. Welcome back. I have Chris Chavez joining me on the podcast today. Chris, thanks so much for taking some time to chat.
Jonathan, thanks so much for having me. I've seen your podcast grow over time, and just the list of guests is awesome. So I'm happy to be part of this.
Of course, and appreciate that. As a fellow podcaster, it's always fun to chat. And as we were talking about beforehand, the audio quality is always a nice perk of chatting with another podcaster.
Yeah, I was kind of like, you're always on your toes just thinking, it's like, I wonder if the other person has headphones on, do they have like a microphone? And like, I'm glad maybe I make things a little bit easier for you just in general.
Just a little easier. Yeah, it's funny. I've had people, you know, have a cat meowing in the background or a lawnmower in the background or taking it from their phone in a car. It's like, let's get back to those in-person interviews. I miss those.
Oh, I definitely miss those too. And kind of, it's funny to see photos from like live shows that I've done and that kind of stuff. I'm like, I can't wait to get back to doing that.
Yeah. Well, before we go too far, who is Chris?
Oh man, this is like, I feel like I'm filling out a dating app bio, which is so funny to me. But yeah, so my name's Chris Chavez. I am a writer at Sports Illustrated. I'm also the founder of Sidious Mag. Started that about 3 years ago. And on there, you know, I kind of take a little bit more creative liberty with sort of like sharing my personality a little bit more. And so I host the Sidious Mag podcast there weekly with athletes, coaches, and whoever. I also host the Runners of New York City podcast on that. And so kind of over time, really leaned into the podcast game. I think we've got about like 7 or 8 shows now. I produce a bunch of them. So my day-to-day job is I write and edit for Sports Illustrated, kind of my 9-to-5. And then from there, outside of that, I'm editing and producing podcasts and getting very little sleep. But when I'm not writing or talking about running, I'm probably doing a little bit of running of my own. And so I run for the Brooklyn Track Club here in New York City, and kind of have really fallen in love with sort of just, you know, the longer grinds where it comes to, you know, running half marathons and marathons. I've done all 6 marathon majors at this point. So I feel like my best days are ahead of me when it comes to running. But in general, I think that kind of covers things in a nutshell.
Very cool. Yeah, it's the another fellow, you know, eat, sleep, breathe, running, and it's fun to see. So has running always been a part of your life, or is it something that has grown as the years have gone on?
It's definitely changed over time. The first instance of running for me was in high school. I joined the track team as a sophomore during the indoor track season, and mainly it was because all the guys around me were on the team, like when it came to our locker room, and they'd hang out after school and they'd crack jokes and all that kind of stuff about their, you know, what happened in practice the previous day. And although they were my friends, like I wanted in on this too. And so like I decided to join the track team. I was a sprinter, very, very mediocre. Like I remember how hard it was for me to try and break 30 seconds for the 200 in that first season. And like the 400 felt like a marathon to me. And I was not good at all. Like I have very little endurance at that point. And so, Yeah, I kind of went through the high school years just running for fun at the same time balancing working for the school newspaper. Sometimes I'd skip practice to go work on the newspaper. And my coach didn't always love that, but, you know, I kind of had to double dip a bit. And so I never really thought I would continue running after high school. Like my last race in high school was my 200 meter PR and it was 25.1. And so I was only going up and getting better. But kind of as the season ended, I was like, okay, that's it. Got to college. And then we kind of all sort of can see the freshman 15 happening over time. At least like I saw it happen with a friend of mine and I was like, I don't want any part of that. So I was just like, I'm going to start running. I'm going to run like, you know, 2 miles a day or something like that, 3 miles a day. People do 5Ks all the time. I could do one of these for charity. And so started off doing that. Then I watched the New York City Marathon on TV. And because that's home for me, I was like, I want to do that someday. So didn't exactly make the jump from 200 meters to 26.2 right away. That would be really tough. I ran a bunch of half marathons in the year that followed and then ultimately gave the marathon a shot when I was 19 years old at the Chicago Marathon in 2013. And so, you know, it was kind of, I started off where a lot of people do, you know, first it was breaking 2 hours in the half marathon. And I was fortunate enough to do that in my very first half. And then from there, when you think of the marathon distance, you kind of just double it up and be like, all right, now I want to break 4 hours in the marathon. And I actually didn't get to do that like right away. It took me a couple cracks. And I didn't do it until I think my third marathon. And at that point I'd done Chicago and New York and then did it in Boston when I got in through a friend of mine. And so that, and then from there, sort of you realize you're halfway through the majors. Why not try and sign up for the rest of them? And the marathon bug kind of caught me. And so I've done the six majors, but really, I guess like for me, it was in 2017, sort of moving back to New York City and getting to know a couple people within the New York City running community and joining a team that I finally got back to sort of that practice mode where I was with other people once or twice a week doing workouts and stuff. And ever since then, the last 3 years, I've definitely seen big, big improvement sort of in my performance. And, you know, when I once thought of trying to break 4 hours in a marathon, like this past year in 2020, my goal was to go back and run Chicago and get under 3 hours. So it would have been really cool to go back, run my 10th marathon where I did my first, and then just, you know, that first goal was 4. The next one is breaking 3 and kind of just skipping over all the, you know, the 3 hour marks and getting under a 2:59 something would have been a really cool thing. But at this point, sort of, I'm still chasing my best times. I still want to break 3 hours in the marathon, want to break 5 minutes for the mile. Haven't done either one of those two things. And so that's what kind of motivates me and pushes me. So I definitely enjoy the performance side of things, but then at the same time, the social aspect of it too. I credit running for introducing me to some of my best friends in New York City. And so, yeah, it's a beautiful thing.
Very cool. What was it about seeing the New York City Marathon that motivated you to want to do it yourself? I had a similar experience with watching Boston in 2013. I said, wow, that's cool. These people are running a marathon. I'd like to do that. I'm curious, what was the perspective you had with New York?
It's funny because for me, it wasn't even in person. It was on TV. And I remember watching it on my TV in my freshman year dorm room at Marquette. And I was just like, maybe it was the fact that I was maybe a little bit homesick. This is the first time I'd been living out in the Midwest and trying something totally new. And then again, it was also seeing the number of people getting out there, cheering people on. Like, I don't recall spectating a New York City marathon before 2013. In 2012, I would have, but it was the year of Hurricane Sandy. So I think that might have just been just sort of seeing the whole city come alive to cheer on people. And it's arguably, I think, my favorite day here in New York.
Yeah, I think the hometown pride aspect is super cool. And to see, you know, see your city in a in such a positive light and such an energizing light is super cool. The Boston Marathon weekend is my favorite weekend of the year. I'm obviously biased being from Boston, but I think that one's the best. So jokes aside, what is, back to what you were saying before on the breaking three and breaking five, what is it about that pursuit that keeps you going?
Well, for the sub five, it was just the fact that in high school, my coach used to give out t-shirts to anyone who broke 5 minutes for the mile, and a bunch of my friends got it. I wasn't even a distance runner, but I've, you know, kept that connection with that coach. He's still at my high school, and I've told him, I was like, when I do it, like, I better get a t-shirt, even though, like, I'm, you know, 10 plus years removed from being in high school. So that's kind of what drives me. And it's sort of also funny to realize, take a step back and know that, like, the guys I used to run with in high school, like, I don't think too many of them are even still running. So in a way, I've become somewhat the fastest guy in my class. That's still giving it a shot. And then for sub three, it's a group of my friends, I think here in New York, all want to go after it. And so the fact that we can keep each other accountable, you know, for 16 weeks or whatever it is over the summer, waking up on Saturday mornings, do a long run, and then afterwards, you know, grab some brunch and just, you know, put in the work collectively. And I think that's just one of my favorite things when it comes to marathon training. Yes, you know, you're super tired and there's going to be days that you don't want to get out there. You feel like, oh, you see a workout on paper and it's so tough. But for me, I think it's having the group of friends to really get you through those tough moments is what makes the process enjoyable.
Yeah, I think it's the ups and downs that make it particularly interesting. And like, I tried to break three and it took me 4 years and I think four attempts. And I think I ran a 4:01 in that process. And I think that, you know, had I done it on the first try, it wouldn't have been as meaningful when it actually happened because of the process, because of the work that it took and the mindset shift that it required to actually get there. And then the sub five piece, that's a goal I have as well. And I've run 5:06 and that was remarkably painful. And it's just such a fun hurt that only lasts for a couple minutes.
Yeah. I every single time I'm chipping away and getting closer, like, I realize, oh man, like, it's only, you know, 8 or 9 seconds that I'm off now. But over time, you kind of really have to break it down, and it doesn't seem like that much easier. And that's kind of, I think, what also helps me when it comes to relating to professional athletes and that pursuit that they have. And, you know, especially when it comes to seeing athletes try and break 4 minutes for the mile, like, that is something that you kind of understand what that grind is like. And so and I'm sure it's very similar to you, when you have these sort of conversations with people, you are also part of, like, your own pursuits. And so there's that relatability that we sort of bring to that conversation.
Totally. One of the questions that I like to ask professional athletes is, fast forward 5 or 10 years, what are you really proud of? And very often, I'd say 90% of the time, their answers are intangibles. It's not breaking X. It's not winning gold at the Olympics. It's not something numerical. It's I got better, and I am my, you know, I didn't leave anything on the table, or I helped foster a strong team culture and set up the next generation. And I think it's really cool because that allows that athlete to be relatable, and it allows people like us who, you know, don't run professionally and don't run that fast to understand the athlete and to understand what makes them tick, right? It's not, you know, how did I perform at my 20 by 400 workout and what are the splits and, you know, what was the delta of, you know, the goal, but it was, did you wake up and work on getting better today? Yes. Great. We can relate to each other. And I think that's what makes athletes so relatable. And it's what I love sharing those stories on this podcast, because it, you know, everybody's human. Some people just run faster than others. It doesn't make them, you know, a unicorn. It just makes them, you know, it changes what they can do with their career. But it's that relatability of the process of getting better and trying to do more every day that I love so much.
Yeah. And it's those days where you realize you try and think like, oh man, this is going to be really tough. I don't know how I'm going to get through it. And then afterwards, it's just like that rewarding feeling. When you do make it through, you know that just getting out the door and putting in the effort, you're a little bit better than you were just if you would have passed up on it.
Right. So how did running and the running industry become a career for you? Was that always the aspiration? I know you mentioned working in journalism in college. Was running journalism always the goal?
No, I wanted to be a beat writer for the New York Yankees. And for me, that kind of stems from the fact that I wanted to play for the New York Yankees. I wanted to, replace Derek Jeter or just, and in all the video games over the years, I would always create myself and put myself on the Yankees and win a couple World Series. And so that was always sort of the dream. But athletically, that never really matched up. I never played for my high school. My career stopped at Little League. And so I figured the closest way to remain to sports was to try to cover sports in general. So I, wrote for my school newspaper, and then from there pursued journalism at Marquette University. And I guess like where running comes into things, I was just like a little bit, I stayed in on a Friday night instead of going out with a bunch of friends, and I stumbled upon a live stream that FloTrack was putting on for some meet out in California. It was the Oxy. There's a 5K, and Dathan Ritzenhein ran super quick, and he was like super amped up and excited after the race. And just kind of that infectious energy that he brought to the interview caught on to me. And I was just like, wow, I mean, this guy is super excited. He ran 13 minutes or something like that, 13 something. And I had just recently run like a 5K. And so I knew my time that was like 20 minutes or something like that. It was like, I mean, it's just kind of superhuman is what you think when you're that inexperienced and don't know as much about the sport. So I decided if this guy's going to be a big deal for the Olympics, then let me learn a little bit more about him and some of these other athletes. So I went back and just started like reading and about past races and watching old videos on YouTube. And then I just, kind of fell into just the YouTube algorithm got to me and just started watching everything, reading a bunch of old Sports Illustrated stories too. And I remember the 2012 Adidas Grand Prix was coming to New York City. And I wanted to get a credential to it just cause like it would be, an opportunity to go and cover some pro races. And I figured I knew Usain Bolt ran there a couple of years back. So maybe he'd be at this meet and I could, see him up close. And so I shot Ryan Fenton an email out of the blue and just decided that, okay, let's see if he can get me a credential and I can help out in any way possible. Like as a, sophomore or something, a freshman at Marquette, you guys can use any sort of help. I'm down for whatever. And so covered that meet and got to do a couple interviews, did some live tweeting, and it seemed to be a hit. And so they kept me sort of like in the loop on things, asked me to go. I volunteered and asked to go cover a cross country meet up in Madison, Wisconsin. And from there, we kind of just built out this relationship where every single weekend I would be going to a bunch of different meets, whether it was Peyton Jordan out in California or Minnesota or the University of Florida for a weekend. And I got to be up close with a bunch of athletes, coaches, agents, and all that kind of stuff, and really fostered these sort of relationships and did interviews, wrote previews and that kind of stuff. I kept myself busy. And the big thing I kind of hone in on is just sort of the fact that I you know, was learning things in the classroom, but you can only learn so much. And I felt like putting things into practice was much more valuable for me. So when I, you know, did arrange my class schedule where I wouldn't have any sort of classes on Fridays, I would leave Milwaukee every Thursday night, come back Sunday. It really felt like I was double dipping and doing a job and at the same time being a student. So it was, it was interesting, and really valuable sort of for my professional career. But yeah, I mean, initially running was definitely not the sport that I wanted to cover. It was baseball. And, you know, kind of fast forwarding a little bit, in 2014, I interned for ESPN for a summer and I got to dip my toes back into covering professional sports. And I, you know, got to write about soccer, and two of the days I spent covering the Mets. And I realized that the baseball writer life wasn't really for me. Like, I just, you know, eating at a ballpark and getting there for some crazy hours, hours before the game, hours after the game, I was not cut out for it. So even after doing it for 2 days, I decided, okay, like, I am just going to stick to running and, you know, kind of craft like a little bit of an avenue there for myself. And so, yeah, that's kind of, I don't think I have the aspirations to cover baseball anymore.
It's interesting. The pro sports life, on the team sports side seems so glamorous, and it's not. I have a lot of friends that work in pro sports. I interned with the Bruins in college, and it's not glamorous. It's like long hours. It's, you know, working well into the evenings and whatnot, and on the weekends. And I guess we do that in running as well, but it's just a different grind. But I think that's true of anything. There's a lot of, you know, unsexy work that has to happen to make it work.
Yeah. And some of those early days, I remember, I, even with FloTrack, like, they've definitely changed over the years, and you know, they've invested so much sort of in just like their live production, that there were used to be nights where me, Alex Lohr, Ryan Fenton, Mitch Kastoff, like, we'd just stay up for so long just waiting to get videos uploaded onto the site. And nowadays, like, I feel like the process is just so much faster, and there's maybe like better uploading speeds and like platforms and all that kind of stuff for videos. But it was definitely a long grind. And for a while, I actually, like, you know, wasn't even getting paid for it. It was just kind of treated like an internship. Eventually, you know, I did start getting paid. And the experience was just like super valuable to me. I got to go to Europe as a result of it, and you know, check out the track scene out there and cover some Diamond League races. So I mean, super thankful for those opportunities that have come up, and you know, it's definitely helped along the way.
Very cool. Let's talk Sidious Mag. You guys have you guys have a very strong and loyal following within your audience. Let's talk about how did that start?
Yeah, so in 2016, so I did, after graduating from college, I took a job at Sports Illustrated. I've been there now for almost 6 years. And I kind of right after the Olympics I hit writer's block. Writer's block was a real thing. I kind of, you know, laughed it off at first and thought, oh, like, that's not real, but it was. And it stemmed from thinking about the last 4 years and getting to the Olympics. Because the Olympics for me were just like a dream come true. I teared up during the opening ceremonies just because I was like, I can't believe I'm here. And I remember that from 2012 to 2016, like, I was spending so many of these weekends away and covering all these smaller meets and that kind of stuff, and occasionally like some Diamond Leagues and US championships. And because I had now gotten to Sports Illustrated and got to cover my first Olympics, like, that wasn't going to have to be a thing anymore. I didn't have to sacrifice so many of those weekends. And knowing that the Sports Illustrated audience isn't necessarily huge track fans, as much as I wish it was, like, you know, the biggest traffic driver for sure is the NFL and the NBA and those major sports. And So I didn't want to bug my editors there with, you know, here's 500 words off like the Peyton Jordan Invitational or something like that, because those are things that I'm still super passionate about and care about, like and following sort of the sport on all levels. And so I was like, well, how am I going to continue to do that? Because I do want to continue to do it. And so I figured I'd team up with a couple friends of mine who I'd made over the years working within the running industry. And we decided to start initially it was just like a blog website type thing where I never wanted it to just be me. Like I wanted it to involve other people. So we kind of decided to team up, create a lot of relatable sort of content and something different, because, you know, Let's Run, you can go to and get all your sort of news and the headlines of the sport. Lots of great articles on there. You've got the message boards too, where that's where the chatter happens of anything going on. And then FloTrack is videos, Runner Space is videos. So I kind of saw a little bit of an area that was lacking was sort of the commentary humor side of things, where, you know, I like Bill Simmons a lot, and the work that he's done with Grantland and The Ringer. And I was just like, well, there really isn't like The Ringer for running. And so kind of it just boils down to maybe coming up with something like that. And so it can riff off of pop culture. It can be serious at times. It could be over nerdy and analytical. And that's kind of like what we've tried to do. And so, you know, I decided to explore podcasting through it. It's something I've always wanted to do. And over time, like it's really become a medium that I love and sort of like having conversations and pushing them out fairly quickly. Like, don't get me wrong. I still love writing and, you know, reporting stories, but it is also so much easier to just hit record like we are right now and, you know, talk for 40 minutes, an hour, 2 hours, whatever it is, and then just push it out within, you know, an hour or two, as opposed to going back and transcribing and writing and crafting a story and outlining and editing and all that kind of stuff. And so that's a process, and I love that process, but, you know, sometimes I do find this to be a little bit easier. So podcasting has been something big that I've leaned on. And then when it comes to just like that loyal sort of, and that fan base that we've built out of, like, I think it ultimately does come down to, we appeal to a lot of the people who are in that. I've looked at the demographics recently of like, who are some of the big, you know, followers of the site, just through Instagram, Twitter, site analytics, and all that kind of stuff, where the people fall in from 16 to like 34 is like the big bulk of it. And it's interesting because I feel like that's a big chunk of people that made like lots of brands and stuff want to work with and that kind of stuff. And it gets away from maybe the aging, you know, Runner's World crowd and that kind of stuff, because, you know, you have to think about the fact that these college kids and these teenagers in high school aren't buying magazines anymore. So that connection isn't immediately sort of there. So in offering something new and different, we have built sort of like an audience of people who consume sort of all different podcasts that we've put out, relatable articles and all that. So it really kind of hit me in the face when I was, when we hosted a Blue Jean Mile in New York City. Like, that's when I first realized that, like, oh, like these followers and these this audience is crazy, because it's like we just put the word out and all of a sudden you had like 10-15 kids show up just with blue jeans and that kind of stuff. Someone drove in from like Philadelphia, New Jersey to run a Blue Jean Mile, and I was just like, this is hilarious to me that we just kind of came up with this gimmick. All credit to Paul Snyder for coming up with the idea. And now it was just kind of like taken off. And, you know, over time, I mean, it was a thing that caused, you know, that led Johnny Gregoric to raise more than $30,000 for mental health awareness. And so it's funny to see it just kind of develop over time, because for me, it ultimately is still a passion project that I've got going outside of my full-time job. Down the road, could I possibly take a risk on myself and try and do this thing full time? We'll see. I mean, we'll just have to wait and see what the future holds. But I'm enjoying it and having fun for now.
Very cool. Yeah, it's an interesting it's an interesting medium. Now that, you know, everyone has a podcast, or so it seems, how do you continue to differentiate against all of the other options out there?
Yeah, there's so many. And it's funny to just kind of sometimes see other podcasts just pop up, or like the idea is like, we're thinking of doing a podcast. And it's like, I don't know, like it does feel like the market's getting a little bit saturated. I just kind of feel like, you know, very similar to you, just kicking back and having these sort of like laid back conversations and asking different questions. I think for me, because I come from, you know, the writing background, I love seeing what's already out there, reading and listening to stuff already out there, and then just taking things a little bit like a step further and, you know, asking for some sort of like behind the scenes stuff of like, okay, so there was this performance that people saw, but like take us through like the days that led up to it and that kind of stuff. And what was different? And so it's getting a little bit deeper on things. I'm, you know, admittedly like a huge nerd when it comes to stats and history and races. So like, I like going back and taking a bunch of notes and coming into something where I'm going to ask someone like Nick Willis, like, hey, you know, third lap of this race, you know, back in 2008, like you were in this position and then this happened. And so like, what were you thinking? And all that kind of stuff. And it's so like, I guess I lean into sort of the nerdery a little bit more too. And, you know, I also kind of, I'm, you know, I'm up in the air right now as to like, am I trying to do a weekly show? Am I just posting episodes whenever I feel like it? I mean, it's a lot of fun for me to just kind of, and Zoom and the pandemic, you know, has made it a little bit easier to just get people online. Like we're talking right now, this thing could be pushed out in a couple hours, and sort of like that immediacy and using sort of the connections that I've made over the past couple of years has been valuable to that for sure. So, I do a bunch of like the interview based shows. That's kind of what mine is. Dana Giordano's podcast is, Scott Faubel's podcast is, but with a little bit more of a humorous movie entertainment spin. But you know, down the road, who knows? Like I might want to try and do some sort of narrative podcast, or even, you know, I've got a concept in the works right now for a game show. And so that'll be fun. But the wheels are constantly turning. I'm always trying to find ways of keeping myself busy and cutting down on my sleep.
Yeah, it's a never-ending quest for less sleep. Thanks again to Beam for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. I take their Dream powder most nights before bed. Dream contains magnesium, a small amount of melatonin, and broad spectrum nano CBD, and always leads to a refreshing night's sleep. I'm also a big fan of their focus capsules for during the day, containing many of the nutrients that I know my body needs, such as ashwagandha, CoQ10, as well as CBD. Focus helps you do exactly that. Visit beamtlc.com and use the code FTLR for 15% off, and let me know what you think. And now, back to our conversation. I think the pandemic has... You know, we always like to look for silver linings. The accessibility of athletes anywhere has been great. For me, I did my first 60 episodes all in person, and I was, of those 60, I think I did two online, and so 58 wow. were in person. And I was like pretty opposed to the format we're using right now. Because for work, I was able to, you know, see people face to face, and I was traveling around and meeting all these athletes in Flagstaff and Boulder and Bend and all these cool places. But then when you take that away, you're forced to you know, find the alternative. And I, like, we can't see each other's face right now. And
I know, I think, and we could probably play off of like facial expressions and stuff like that. That is one of the downsides to all of it.
Exactly. Like I had a conversation with someone early on, and my dad listens to all my podcasts, and he likes to give feedback, and he tells me the ones he loves a lot. And he was like, you like touched the surface of what could have been like a really, really interesting conversation with one of the guests. And she said something that, you know, you could have dug into, and you didn't. And I was like, I know, because I was super uncomfortable not knowing if her pauses were, you know, like what her face was saying and what her body language was saying, like, please don't ask any more questions about this, or like, this is something I really want to dig into and open up and be vulnerable about. And I think that, like, I've definitely gotten better at reading, you know, the audio tells of people and like their enthusiasm levels and stuff. But like you said, like, there's no visual understanding of, is this person super excited about something right now, or are they itching to talk, or am I rambling again like I am right now? And
no, it's kind of like, because like I think it all just kind of comes down to picking and choosing where you choose to do this. Like, we're doing this on Zencastr, and I've done a couple on here. Other times I choose to do Zoom. When you do Zoom, you sacrifice a little bit of audio quality when it comes to it. And then, like, you just have to rely on the person's internet being strong enough to sustain both their audio and their video. So yeah, it has been sort of tough. And like, I'm even just sort of thinking, like, heading out to the first, you know, track meet in a couple weeks that I've been to in over a year. Like, I'm planning on doing some podcasts, but, you know, is setting up 6 feet apart, new microphone tops, and like, and you know, are we gonna have to wear masks? Is there gonna be a divider? Like, in planning to do live sort of podcasts, so like, yeah, it's still a weird time.
Yeah, totally. I was planning to do one in Boston with Molly Seidel, and we were actually talking about doing a lot, like, an in-person podcast in her backyard. And my mics each have a 6 foot cord. And I was like, do I really want to sit 10 feet away or 12 feet away and have a conversation like in a backyard just so I can have the, you know, facial expressions? I was like, yes, actually I do. I think that, you know, it would have been fun. Unfortunately that one didn't end up happening, but we're recording this month. But it's like that. I don't know personally if I want to do it until I can do it in a way that feels closer to normal. And
right,
that's,
and there's just no
personal
timetable
preference.
For it.
Mm-hmm. Totally. And for me, I've become such a stickler on the audio quality that, like, if I don't have like great audio quality, I might not post it, as you know, unless it's someone who people will listen. Like, I won't listen to a podcast that has poor audio quality. There are so many options, and it's like, it's just, you know, you said, you know, pick your spots. That's the spot that I pick. My episode with Shalane had terrible audio quality. This was in the middle of March, so right when literally everybody was, you know, using the internet and working from home and all this stuff. And the sponsor of that episode was like, you know, great guest, great conversation, but like the audio quality was poor. And I was like, well, that's the one of the only guests where somebody would, you know, work through the quality issue to hear her wisdom. But I'm looking forward to getting back in person interviews. So you mentioned the track meet that you mm-hmm. are attending. Talk more about that. We were chatting about that before we hit record.
Yeah, so that is going to be my big, foray into trying to broadcast a live track meet. So this is the Texas qualifier going down in just a couple weeks on February 26th and 27th. It'll be free for everyone to watch on the Sidious Mag YouTube channel. I will be on the call, and I guess it hasn't gone out there yet, so maybe by the time this gets posted, this could be news. Kyle Merber and I will be doing the commentary. We're working on one other person in our booth, and kind of we put out like a 2.5 hour podcast. So we're like, all right, so let's do that just kind of over the course of 2 days. And so we're going to be, we'll be there first night. That Friday night is going to be all races that are aimed at getting people qualified for the U.S. Olympic trials. So that'll be 1500, 800, 1500, 5K, 10K. Lots of really cool names in those fields. And then the second night will be Saturday, and that will be all races that are aimed at getting people qualified for the Olympics. So the Summer Games in Tokyo. So obviously gets a little bit faster. Again, 800, 1500, 5K, 10K, both men and women on all those fields. A lot of really cool sponsors have stepped up to help me chip away at the big expense that it's going to take to hire out a production crew and stage this meet. And so kind of like the Trials of Miles, race organizers have handled sort of, all the fields and getting pacers and all that kind of stuff. And so for me, the responsibility has fallen on sort of the live stream. And so I'm super excited about that because I guess it's like one of those big talking points that people have. Usually I see it on Twitter from time to time. It's just like lots of complaining about paywalls but I understand that, it is a business. Some of these places do broadcast these races. And plus, if you want to, give back and invest in sort of the sport, you should sort of subscribe to the people who are bringing you this coverage. Cause it is a job and it does take time and money. But for me, I think this is just going to be like a very interesting sort of attempt at, I mentioned before just staying in on that Friday night and watching this track meet that got me hooked on the sport. Nowadays I think about it and it's like the chances of that possibly of happening, would kind of be low if I was just in college, stayed in on a Friday night and did the same thing over again. If I would have clicked on that link, I would have hit a paywall or something like that. And so I wasn't going to subscribe right away. And so, this will be interesting because I'm hoping we get as many eyeballs as possible. We're going to do things a little bit differently on the broadcast. Another cool thing is like we're going to release a 2-minute clip of the Sidious Mag documentary on NAZ Elite that Stephen Kirsch and Ryan Sterner put together. There's going to be a lot of cool little things that make this track meet hopefully a little bit different than others in the past. So I'm super pumped. I mean, on Instagram, on the Sidious Mag Instagram and on the Trials of Miles Racing Instagram, like we've been revealing some of the fields in just a couple minutes. I'll probably post the women's 10K, which features Sarah Hall and Kira D'Amato and Kim Conley and Emily Sisson. The 1500 has Centrowitz, Donovan Brazier, Nick Willis, Evan Jaeger. And that's just like kind of the early teasers. We haven't even released the full fields for that. So it sort of feels like a little Diamond League fell on our lap here, and it's going to happen in just a couple weeks. So fingers crossed, like things can stay somewhat safe. Everyone's going to have to get tested at least 2 times in the 7 days leading up to the event. So, as of right now, like excitement levels are through the roof the week of. I think excitement flips to sort of a little bit of just anxiousness. But I think once the races get going, it's going to feel like a job again. And so I'm excited to get back behind the mic to do some play-by-play and some color commentary for that.
Very cool. I just tweeted the women's 10K field, so I got the scoop. No, beat you to it. No, that's awesome. I think that there's so much excitement in particularly that race, the women's 10K or 10,000. Kira and Sarah are just so exciting right now, and I think that it's going to be quite a race as they both pursue that that qualifier and making that team.
Mm-hmm. And then the first night is, I mean, while that will all happen on the second night, I just, I'm excited to also see just sort of a lot of the some people's dreams hopefully coming true of qualifying for the U.S. Olympic trials just in and of themselves. So we'll see. It should be 2 very special nights in Texas.
Very cool. Talk to me a little bit more about the format of Sidious Mag and the podcast network. I've had Dana Giordano on this podcast, Scott Fauble as well. Dana's episode is the number 5 most listened to of the 140 plus of mine. And she leads a great conversation as well. Same thing with Scott, particularly on the movie side of things. How did that come to be, and how do you work with external partners or athletes in that regard to sort of maintain the integrity overall, but making sure that each show has its own unique character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is really fun because, you know, behind the scenes, I produce both of those shows in addition to Runners of NYC and Running Things Considered, and I think the Track and Field History podcast. And then aside from that, David Melly handles his own show, the Run Your Mouth podcast, and then Emma Zimmerman handles her podcast, the Social Sport podcast. So I've got the rest sort of behind the scenes. And kind of the way it just works is, you know, we come up with a plan. Like Dana and I have a spreadsheet where we have guests and dates set up for recording and possible published dates. And I work with her in sort of like, okay, this week I think we should roll with this person. This person's a little bit newsworthy for these reasons, and just sort of making things a little bit different where on Dana's show, I think there's a good amount of just diversity when it comes to the different types of backgrounds that these people have. Some are, you know, entrepreneurs, others are athletes, and some could be coaches. And then some are just like people who Dana finds on her own. It's funny to hear her talk sort of about bringing up like a TikTok like star. And I'm like, I don't know who this person is. Like, I'm not that deep into sort of TikTok, but she's been doing a great job crushing it when it comes to promoting it. And it's also just another avenue for her to really push herself as an athlete and show this other side of her where she can hold and host these awesome conversations with people to get to know not only the guest better, but even Dana herself, where she sees it sort of and was very open at the very beginning about just like, you know, she's not going to run forever. So like kind of has to think about what that next step could be, and whether it's, you know, a career in broadcast or stuff. Like she can sort of start to get some sort of some reps in here. And when it came to Fobble is just very simply saying, you know what, I want to talk about movies with my friends. You know, this is very much ripping off of the idea of the rewatchables on The Ringer, but instead, it's Fobble and friends just kind of talking about running on his podcast. So that one's really easy. I mean, for the most part, like all these shows are really easy for me to edit, where it comes down to just me just listening and scrubbing through a couple things, adding and recording intros with them and that kind of stuff. But yeah, I mean, it's just kind of the time commitment is the big thing when it comes down to it for me. So I need to obviously get a little bit better at kind of scheduling out things. But when there's just so much going on, like sometimes it can get a little bit tricky. But yeah, at some point down the road, I'd love to hire some help when it comes to hiring a producer. Or I think there is the resources are going to be there to possibly take on an intern this upcoming summer. So yeah, behind the scenes, though, it's just extra work for me to keep me busy.
What's your favorite thing about podcasting?
I think it's just kind of like the that you can learn more about the person's personality off of it. Because for years, I guess, like working with FloTrack and ESPN and Sports Illustrated, like, yes, I guess like people could come to me for news on Twitter. Like that's kind of, it's very easy. Like I just push out a ton of tweets from time to time, and maybe that's how people got their news. Or if I write a story, it's very easy to just kind of read it and scroll over my name and just get, you know, whatever the story is providing. And I think what the podcast has really done is people get to know my sense of humor a little bit more. Somehow legs are feeling good. It was like a little catchphrase that I coined last year or 2 years ago. And then that became sort of like another little funny thing that came out of it. People, you know, have also taken sort of an interest in sort of my own running from time to time. And so I think, you know, that's been it for me, sort of. It just like is developing a little bit more of that personality where people now might be a little bit more invested in what I have to say or write because they know me better as a person. And so I'm hoping that also has the same effect when it comes to Scott and Dana and David and Emma, even Jesse Squire, when it comes to just what all the different shows that they produce.
Yeah, I think You touched on it with talking about Dana, about like not going to run forever, and understanding and finding these things outside of competitive running that can be a source of income and interest and time and things like that. I think the athlete sponsorship world is changing quickly. And you know, a sponsorship is not just a, I observed a Twitter interaction with you and a couple athletes earlier in the week or a few days ago, where the conclusion was, you know, it's not just the shoe sponsor anymore. And
oh yeah, there right, with Tiana Bartoletta. I put out the tweet that she was unsponsored, and kind of like what I meant, what and probably should have said, was that she has no apparel and footwear sponsor at the moment. But I kind of hit tweet a little too quick, and no, I mean it's true, and kind of like the to the point that I think you're getting at, like there's other ways to sort of for an athlete to really diversify their portfolio. Because you kind of you were seeing a lot of these companies start to pull back on the amount of money that they're investing in athletes, where and that's just kind of a sign of the times, just based off like the pandemic making things financially hard across the board. But in a way, I look at something like the Throws, for example. Ryan Krauser, amazing athlete, and you know, just broke the world indoor record, signed with Nike. But on the other side of things, I mean, I have no idea what he makes off of his contract and that kind of stuff. But you also look at someone who's his contemporary and, you know, teammate on the U.S. Olympic team and the reigning world champ, Joe Kovacs. He's someone who's not sponsored by Nike. He's sponsored by Velasa, which is a company that he has kind of a stake in for sure. But they're bigger in the weightlifting industry. And now you're starting it like, so he's got something different right off the bat, and he's not as tied like Nike and some of these other companies own you from head to toe when it comes to sneakers, apparel, sunglasses. Sometimes when you're able to go out and break outside of just like that normal, typical old school sort of sponsor, you're able to pick up more things. And Tiana Bartoletta has done a great job of adding a ton of sponsors. I think NAZ Elite does a great job of it too, where they've got different sponsors outside of just Hoka. They've got, you know, a sunglass sponsor and that kind of stuff. And so, yeah, I mean, Joe Kovacs is sponsored by Duluth Trading Company. It's just so interesting. Like, I see his posts from time to time, but it's like it makes sense. It does make sense, sort of like the big, burly, strong man doing hard work and training out in the winter. So, the athlete sponsorship side of things is interesting, and kind of bringing it all home with like, you know, Dana, and even the conversation I had with Kyle Merber. There is an emphasis now on, you know, the athletes have to push, you know, make a brand for themselves, as harsh as that word is, that people don't enjoy. It's like, what is your, sort of like your brand? But I think Kyle boiled it down properly. It's like coming back to the question of why is it that people should root for you as an athlete? And so finding that reason and really pushing it out. I think nowadays, especially when you do try to stand out, it has to be more than just, you know, posting photos that you're a runner. Like, I think you have to dive in a little bit deeper than that.
Totally agree. I was chatting with a husband and wife combo from Boulder. They're pro triathletes, and they're sponsored by an investment banking firm. And it's just like, okay, that's where we're at. That makes sense for triathlon. But to your point, it's, you know, I forget who, Morgan Peterson, whose bio says performance over social media. I was joking with him about like, no, you actually need both these days. And being on the brand side with making decisions with who we're going to sponsor and who we're going to support and provide product for and services and whatnot, at least from where I sit and what we're doing, just being fast is not compelling anymore. Maybe it was 10 years ago when that was essentially all that mattered. But I think now it's, as you were saying, it's like you must be interesting and you must be open and telling the story. Steph Bruce is my favorite example of this, but really the whole Northern Arizona Elite team and sort of the model that they take. Sally McRae is a pro trail runner who does an amazing job of like letting people in to her life. Keely Henninger, another one. They're just so good at being human. Tiana as well, so good at being human, and like that's the piece that people care about. And then we're also starting to work with a lot more family oriented people, or people who are interested in the sport for longevity purposes, and not just, you know, going to the Olympics today, but like how do you sustain high performance for life? And that's relatable. Anybody can relate to an athlete wanting to compete for as long as possible, because in theory, we all want that, right? So those are the people that I think are most interesting and you know, candidly, most worth supporting, if you have to, you know, put a worth behind it, which, you know, it feels dirty to say it that way, but when dollars are involved, that's, you know, sort of how it works. But then how do you make people care about you? It's building your own, as you said, that personal brand, and inviting people along for the journey. So podcasts help get there, Instagram live and storytelling and interviews, and it's all a piece of the puzzle. When I was in Flagstaff a couple of years, this was 2019 now, I was meeting with Ben Rosario, and he was saying that a core tenet of being on that team is being ready for an interview at all times. And that's fundamentally who they are. I had never done, actually, I had done two podcasts at that point, and I had my microphones in my bag because I was doing one with Ali Kiefer later that day. And I said to him point blank, I was like, all right, you want to do an interview right now? Let's do it. And we did. And that's the piece that I think was missing, you know, when podcasts weren't as common and whatnot. But I think that we're now in this time when we can learn so much about athletes and become a fan of the person, not just, you know, how they are performing. And I think that's great. I think, you know, as you were saying about Dana, like these people aren't going to run forever, but you look at someone like Shalane Flanagan, who is just as relatable as ever, if not more, because she's now a mother and a coach and all of these things that is truly the human experience.
Totally. I mean, you kind of nailed it just there where, yeah. And kind of like to your point, even just elaborating a little bit further, it's interesting because you rattled off a bunch of, professional ultra runners and trail runners. And it's so interesting to me to see just like, because, you know, when we see just the huge numbers, like even Walmsley training for like the Olympic trials, people saw 30 miles and all of a sudden, like they got super excited and pumped up about it, because in that sort of community, I feel like it's very easy to see the performances for themselves. And no matter how fast or how slow, time is irrelevant. It's just the accomplishment is what people get really sort of amped up about. And to the layperson who doesn't even follow the sport, that makes them really sort of perk up. And so, you know, there's got to be a way to strike that sort of balance and also bring it to, you know, the track and the shorter road races. And so, yeah, it's just something interesting that just came to mind after you were rattling off some of those names. And it's cool because, like, for me, like, personally, I think Courtney Dowalter is probably, like, one of my favorite, like, ultra trail runners to follow on Instagram. I've never met her, never even spoken to her. But I'm, like, just, like, so impressed by everything that she does. And there's so many people like that, who don't even know like when she's going to race. They'll just kind of see the after effects later on and just like, oh, she did this past weekend. I had no idea that was going to happen. So awesome. So cool. It happened to me at work, like the NBA editor, one day was just like, do you know anything about this Courtney girl? And I was like, yeah, isn't she impressive? He's like, dude, I think she's one of my favorite athletes. And just like the basketball shorts is what really gets me. And I was like, yeah, I mean, it's awesome. And so like, I want to, yeah, I mean, it's just sort of like finding the equation to get that excitement to also translate over to the shorter stuff.
Totally. I think that the piece that you mentioned there, these athletes shoot their shot and they fail often. And I think that that's more so in ultra running. I mean, yeah, it definitely happens in road racing and track and field, but the failures are spectacular in the trail world. Like Courtney went to the hospital.
I saw that, yeah.
During an FKT attempt, and just like that's nuts. Also, I've met her in person. She is just as amazing in person as she is with her social presence and her racing. Jim Walmsley is a fascinating individual, you know, running a 40-mile training run at a 5:38 pace and then, you know, hitting the number 200K world record.
Insane.
It's fascinating. It's like these spectacular shots that, mm-hmm. you know, if one of 10 goes in, you're doing great. And this is definitely happening in road racing and track and field. And I think that when we see athletes try and fail, that's the piece that like, that's the story. That's the piece that it makes them relatable. And again, it's like people who win all the time are not, they're not relatable. And I think that's, you know, it's crazy that's like a fault in today's world. But I think that it's finding the balance between, obviously don't try and fail, but finding the balance between that elite performance and humanizing and opening up and allowing others to come along for the ride so that they can celebrate the victories when they happen. I think it's super cool to see. And I love that story and I love that context.
For sure. And that just kind of, you know, makes me just even more excited because I've been able to just sort of now pick up and follow someone like Jim's story, seeing what happened at the Carbon X 2 event where he falls 11, 12 seconds short of like the world record. It just falls in line with just the trends we've seen over time where it's like, you know, he'll get it the second time. And so it's really funny to pick up on something like that. But now I'm invested. I'm invested in it.
Totally. Well, I could talk about this topic for another hour or five. But thanks so much for taking some time to chat today. And hopefully I'll see you out at a race at some point this year, which would be very exciting. And where can we follow you and all of your storytelling for those who aren't already?
Yeah, so I'm at Chris Chavez on Twitter. That's Chavez. On Instagram, I'm at Chris_J_Chavez. And then on to follow Sidious Mag, it is at Sidious Mag on Twitter, Instagram. It's on Facebook. And, you know, the Sidious Mag podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your shows. So that's where people can find me. And if you're within like a 10-mile radius in New York City, I'm on Bumble and Hinge.
Amazing. And how are the legs feeling today?
Legs are feeling good for now until I get outside in the snow and try and see if a workout can happen. But for now, they're feeling good.
Awesome. Chris, thanks so much for taking some time to chat, and we'll see you out there.
Thanks for having me.
That's it for today's episode. Like many long runs, it's sad when it has to end. I hope you join in next week on For the Long Run. And in the meantime, happy trails. If you've enjoyed this episode, it would mean a lot to me if you shared it so that others can find it and enjoy it too.